Fermin Aldeguer is going to MotoGP in 2025 and 2026. It is official.
You're in a situation where there's going to be real competition for the factory rides that are available. It's obviously still proven to be the best bike on the grid, so why wouldn't you want to be on it?
And Nick Harris is going to be stopping in for our latest Surtees stories.
So a lot of riders, the Halewoods and the Redmonds of people, won three Grand Prix on one day, Halewood did, at Assen, as did Jim Redmond, which now would be absolutely impossible.
I'm Greg Haynes, and this is the Motorbike Racing Show. We've gone early this week. It's only Wednesday. It's the 20th of March, 2024. Hello, 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 or bon dia, should I say, from Catalunya, because I'm here ahead of round two of the World Superbike Championship this weekend. All of the live coverage from Friday, I'll be there commentating with James Tozend on Discovery Plus and Eurosport 2, and also the MotoGP World Championship, which is live on TNT Sports, Discovery Plus, and also the main races on ITV. We'll talk more about that in a while, but plenty of news from the worlds of MotoGP and World Superbikes. Don't forget, we've also got the MotoE World Championship kicking off this weekend at Portimao, whereas at Barcelona we'll have the first appearance for World Supersport 300 and also the Blue Crew Yamaha R3 World Cup, as it's now known, for 2024. Let's get the latest news, and of course we know what that's all about. Fermin Aldeguer has signed his two-year Ducati deal for 2025 and 2026, as we anticipated in previous editions of this programme. More coming up on that in a moment. BMW have strongly hinted at MotoGP from 2027 when the new rules are coming in, amongst them smaller engines. The big question is, will Toprak Razgatlioglu be going with them if that is the case? But by then, the Turkish rider will be 30 years old. Fabio Quartararo has spoken out, saying the gap to Yamaha now from the other teams is bigger than ever. In Italy, MotoSprint are reporting that Aprilia could be interested in the services of the 2021 World Champion for next year. And as I say, the Portuguese Grand Prix will be broadcast on free-to-air terrestrial television in the UK this weekend. ITV will show the sprint from 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, that's on ITV3, and then on Sunday, Moto3, Moto2 and the MotoGP Grand Prix will be shown on ITV4, coverage starting at 10 a.m. Full coverage as usual also on TNT Sports and on Discovery Plus. Well, the big news, of course, is that Fermin Aldeguer then is going to be in MotoGP next season. It really puts a cat amongst the pigeons. What will the others do? What sort of effect is this going to have on the MotoGP field? Well, there's plenty of question marks. And to try and help us start getting to the bottom of this, I've got the latest from Michael Guy, who is the sports editor of Motorcycle News.
It's absolutely exciting to see another Moto2 hotshot, another rookie coming into MotoGP in 2025. It obviously is early for this to be happening, and I think it's going to be start of a pretty big shake-up in MotoGP. I think we've got 18 of the 22 riders are out of contract for next year, so there's going to be a lot of movement, I believe, and this is just the first part. The other factor is that he's already signed for Ducati. The rumour is that he's going to be going to Pramac, which would suggest that he'll be on an official bike, so a 2025 spec Desma Sedici, which is obviously a bit of a coup. You've also got the factor that VR46 team haven't actually confirmed what bikes they're going to be running in 2025. So currently there's obviously 8 Ducatis on the grid. If VR46 were tempted by a move to another manufacturer, Yamaha, Aprilia, etc., that would obviously reduce the amount of Ducati riders on the grid to 6. Currently they have 9 riders on their books if you include Aldeguer. So you're in a situation where there's going to be real competition for the factory rides that are available. It's obviously still proven to be the best bike on the grid, so why wouldn't you want to be on it? The other thing, playing devil's advocate, is it too soon for a rider like Fermin? He has obviously was absolutely stunning pace at the end of last season, won 4 races on the bounce, which is quite unprecedented in that class such as Moto2. But playing devil's advocate, you could say that it was the end of the season, the championship was under control, so maybe people like Acosta wasn't able to or didn't need to maybe ride quite as quick as he had previously earlier in the year to wrap up the title. He obviously had a difficult race in the first round in Qatar, getting used to the tyres. So it's an interesting one, but I think what is good is that the last couple of years, we've just had one rookie come into MotoGP. We had Fernandez. Well, the last few years, we've had one or two riders come into the class. This obviously spells a bit of a shake-up for the class because, in theory, we're going to get some... You would think that maybe with Fermín coming in so early in the year, maybe another Moto2 rider will graduate into the paddock, into the MotoGP class. So it could mean for an even bigger shake-up of the class in general. So all in all, I see it as a positive thing. We only have to look at what Acosta's done so far in testing and in the opening round of the championship to see that these Moto2 riders can be very, very fast.
You're listening to the Motorbike Racing Show. You can follow us on your favourite podcast platform and contact us by email. It's talkingawaypodcast@gmail.com. If you prefer the social media routes, my channels are Greg Haynes TV on Instagram and on X. So, a busy weekend ahead, not just for MotoGP, but for World Superbikes as well, as they head to their second round at the Circuit de Barcelona, Catalunya. Let's get the latest news from World Superbikes. Team Pedicini, as they are so famously known these days, known as Team Pedicini Racing, will not be at Barcelona and Assen as previously planned. The oldest team on the grid, it's been running since 1998. They're now in partnership with Vinales Racing, will be back for Misano at round 5. Team owner Lucio Pedicini saying, "I'm very sorry not to be able to participate in the next two rounds, but unfortunately our budget changed only a few weeks ago." Their rider is Isaac Vinales. Over at MIE Honda, Mick Shanley has doubled up his role. He's no longer just the technical director, but now the crew chief to Taz McKenzie as well. And they already look better in the test at Barcelona at the end of last week. Ike Lecuona in the main Honda team has said a big punch in the shoulder is how it feels. He missed most of the test because of that shoulder he dislocated back in Australia. He's also reverted to Honda's oldest swing arm. And all of the coverage from Friday, Saturday and Sunday, Eurosport and Discovery Plus. Friday is going to be packed, actually, because we've got not just free practices 1 and 2 for the superbikes, but also Superpole qualifying now as well on a Friday for World Supersports and for World Supersport 300. So they need to double up with those sessions in a way and use them as a practice and a qualifying. So it's all going to be happening, isn't it, for JT and I in commentary. Well, the test last week, Nicolò Boudica seems to have unlocked the secret of the Panigale V4, doesn't he? It's all about corner speed, and he's really combining his Moto2 experience with his superbike experience and supersport experience, and he's absolutely flying. It was Boudica leading the way. Remember in last week's show, I said that Bautista seemed much happier. Well, we then got to the second day on the Friday, and it all seemed to go wrong again. He's trying to work on himself as opposed to actual setup changes, but a very unusual situation for Bautista. Is it to do with the weight, the added weight for this year and where they're putting it on the bike? He just does not have any rear traction, a real struggle for the reigning double champion. Nobody had traction problems at Phillip Island because of the new surface, but at the other tracks we've been to so far in the pre-season, Jerez in Spain, Portimao in Portugal, and now Catalunya in Spain, Bautista is struggling big time. Toprak was right up there, second only to Boudica. Watch out also for the likes of Petrucci, Iannone's going well, and Sam Lowes as well. And Jonathan Rea got into the top 5 for Pata Yamaha. Are they going to find a breakthrough? Can he get into the points, let alone on the podium for the first time this weekend, I wonder? Well, we're going to find out, aren't we, in just a few days' time. I can't wait, actually. There is so much to look forward to. But now we move on to our second edition of Surtees Stories. Last week, we were joined by Julian Ryder. This week, by Nick Harris. And it's all to celebrate the 60-year anniversary of when John Surtees so famously won the 1964 Formula One World Championship title for Ferrari, having already won 7 titles in Grand Prix racing, 5 in the 500cc class, 2 in the 350s. John Surtees, what a legend, the only champion on 2 wheels and 4. Nick Harris then, good friend of mine, broadcaster and journalist, joins us for the latest Surtees stories. Well, Nick, it was just such a special and unique achievement, wasn't it? And one I just cannot see being repeated, to be quite honest.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. Amazing achievement to do what John Surtees did. No, I think for many, many reasons, I think it would be impossible. Now, I suppose the nearest we came to it was a decade ago when Valentino Rossi tested for Ferrari. I think he'd had a couple of tests at Mugello, and the rumours, I don't think they're even rumours, the story was that they wanted to sign him to drive full-time for Ferrari. Not many people turn Ferrari down, do they, in Formula One? But he did, and he carried on two wheels.
Is it sad, do you think, Nick, in a way, or are we just making ourselves sound old by saying what a shame they can't rotate a bit and do a little bit of bikes, a little bit of cars? It would be quite nice. You'd have to think it would be a real advertising dream for somebody, some sponsor somewhere.
Yeah, I think the world changed dramatically from when John Surtees did it. The championships were nearly all European-based. There wasn't so many races. I think that's a start. The technicalities of riding a MotoGP bike and a Formula One car now are so, so complicated. I can't really see it happening again, to be honest with you. But yeah, if you could, Valentino Rossi was the dream, wasn't it? Formula One were desperate for him. They were struggling then. They wanted somebody like Valentino Rossi to lighten the sport up, and I'm sure he would have done that. And of course, he's doing okay now on four wheels.
Yes, I mean, he was just narrowly missing the podium, wasn't he, the other day when he finished fourth? I mean, he was very, very close to the podium there. Nick, what was it like? Because what perhaps a lot of people don't know now is that Grand Prix used to be in different orders. It wasn't like we have now, and it's almost always Moto3 followed by Moto2, building up to the big finale with MotoGP. We even had different races on different weekends, didn't we, at one point in history? 350s one weekend, or there was a 250 race somewhere. It was completely different, wasn't it, in that sense?
It was. I mean, a Grand Prix weekend was unbelievable. Unbelievable if you were covering it as a journalist, I can tell you. 50cc, 125cc, 250cc, 350cc, 500cc, and then a sidecar race, all to report. So usually on the same day, sometimes they would have one race on the Saturday, say the 50s or the 125, just to space it out a little bit. But it was, yeah. And of course, a lot of riders, the Halewoods and the Redmonds of people, won three Grand Prix on one day. Halewood did at Assen, as did Jim Redmond, which now would be absolutely impossible.
There was a rumour, wasn't there, just a few years ago that Marc Márquez might go back and do a Moto2 race. Remember, how close was that to happening? Because you were there, I wasn't there at that point. Was that a genuine thing?
I think it was something that we like to think would happen. Logistically, for it to happen, I think was pretty impossible, which is a great shame. I think he would have been keen to do it. Of course, I remember Freddie Spencer winning, the 250 and the 500s in one season. The only rider to actually do that. And it's thought that that probably finished Freddie's career off. He never won another Grand Prix. I never finished on the podium after winning that 500cc world title after the 250cc championship. I think it's just too much for a rider to do now.
In terms of Surtees then, you did meet him a couple of times, I think. What was he like? What was the experience? Where did you meet him? What was he like?
Well, I met him. He got involved again in motorcycling when a Chinese factory came in and built a 125, and he was involved in that. So I met him then, and I had met him a few times, very quietly spoken, obviously extremely, extremely clever man with everything he did. First on two wheels, Norton, and then, of course, on the MV Agusta, then switching, winning the world title, bringing Honda their first. It's quite ironic, really, wasn't it? He brought Honda their first Formula One win. In fact, the car is in the museum at Motegi when you go to the Japanese Grand Prix. For him to do that was amazing. And then involved a lot, wasn't he, with he had his own racing team, which in fact Mike Halewood went and drove for after he'd won 9 world titles. He switched to four wheels with quite a lot of success. I think he was European Formula 2 champion and drove in Formula 1 and for the Surtees team.
And I'll never forget, actually, being in the commentary box at Austin, Texas, Circuit of the Americas 10 years ago. It must be 10 years pretty much to the day, actually, in 2014. You, me, Martin Raines, and we were doing some practice sessions on the Friday, and we were talking about Mike Halewood because some stat had come up that I think Marc Márquez was about to equal or beat from Halewood in, obviously, Márquez's dominant season 2014. And I remember you saying to Rainsy that Hailwood was from God's City. Not sure I agree with that one, Nick, with Oxford being God's City. But just tell us that amazing story. It's in your book, and you've told me before about when you met Mike Hailwood for the first time, because that's an amazing story.
Yeah, he was my absolute hero. He grew up just over the hill from my village in another village. And he was probably the greatest motorcycle racer that ever lived. And he'd stopped Grand Prix racing and he was riding in some special events when Honda pulled out, but they gave him a bike to ride in some British events. And I was working as a clerk in the solicitor's office, bored to tears. The phone rang one afternoon. It was the boss, Bunny Cole, saying, could you come up to my office? I thought, oh my golly. It stopped me going to London because I was too scruffy to represent the firm with my long hair and beard. I thought, I'm in trouble again. And then I went. And he said, before this gentleman leaves, I thought you'd like to meet him. And it was Mike Hailwood. Funny enough, that was on the Friday, and we went to Old Park to watch him race on the Monday. It was a bank holiday Monday, but that's the first time I met him. And for once in my life, Greg, I was speechless, and that doesn't happen very often.
I was just going to say, you must have been absolutely starstruck. You didn't even know he was there, did you?
No, I didn't. No idea whatsoever. And I'd been all over the country, been to the TT to follow him. He was the group of us here in our village and in Oxford followed him everywhere he raced in Britain at the time for the MV Augusta, the first ever TT I went to. He won the 500 race when both him and Ago crashed, but he jumped back on and won the race. And then switching to Honda, yeah, he was our hero. Kings of Oxford, that his dad was the boss of, was a massive motorcycle shop. And I was going to school one day, again bored to tears, and I cycled past the window of Kings, and the Honda that they'd lent him, I think it was the 254 that he won the TT on, was in the window of the shop. And I was equally as gobsmacked as I was when I met him to see that Honda in the shop window in Oxford.
Nick, just before we go, two more things. Number one is, did you watch Qatar last week and what did you make of it? Pedro Acosta's looking pretty handy.
He certainly is. I did a blog this week saying there was three big sporting events in the Middle East. Formula One, enough said, I think, because it wasn't what you call exciting, was it? The boxing that lasted two rounds. And then, of course, in Qatar, MotoGP. MotoGP came out well on top. Acosta, very, very impressive indeed. And he's going to win a race before the end of the season. But I remember we said, Mark Marquez, I think he's going to win a race before the end of the season. That first year, he didn't win a race. He went on to win the championship. I don't think Acosta will probably win the championship, but he's going to win a race or two.
Finally, Nick, people will be wondering, how are you? How's life? Grandfather now, you've got Candy the dog as well. Your wife, Sheila, who I know is sat next to you in the car right now, and I was very tempted.
No, she's fallen asleep listening to me talk.
I was very tempted to bring Sheila in just to say, what's it like being married to Nick Harris? But I might spare her until next time. Do you still say let battle commence when the red lights go out? Are you commentating from the sofa? That's what I like to think.
Do. You'd be amazed. When the season starts, as it did on Sunday, you still get exactly that same feeling. Yeah. I had, 38 years ago? Well, longer than that now, when I started covering Grand Prix. So it's part of your life, and it's a massive part of my life, and it will never, never go away.
Finally, on the John Surtees matter, do you think we'll ever see the like of that again? Will there ever be some kid who comes along and wraps up Formula One or the bikes very early and then goes to pursue the other one, or is it just not feasible anymore?
I don't think it's feasible anymore, but I don't know. Lewis Hamilton said he always wanted to ride a MotoGP bike, and Jorge Lorenzo says he thinks it's like riding a scooter, he used to say to me. It's a bit more difficult than that. Now, I don't think probably, with 21 MotoGP races, 24 Formula One races, and everything around it, I don't think it would be possible. It'd be wonderful to see. If it did, I think it would go bikes to cars rather than cars to bike.
Well, Nick, thanks very much. I know you sat in the car. Have you just come out of Costa Coffee, or are you just going into Costa Coffee?
No, we've just come out. And and the rain, I can assure you, in England is still pouring down.
Marvellous. Okay, well, thanks for the memories. I can't believe it's sad to think John Surtees isn't with us anymore. And by the way, it's a travesty. He was never made Sir John Surtees, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Yeah. Very much so. Obviously he's a legend because of what he achieved. He was a fantastic motorcycle racer.
Nick, thanks so much, and I'm glad you enjoyed your coffee.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Cheers.
Well, in the same way, I always say it's a shame that we can't say Murray Walker, Sir Murray Walker. It's just such a shame that we can't say Sir John Surtees, because we certainly should be able to. Although there was a petition going around back in 2011, 2012, and I actually spoke during an interview on the telephone with the great John Surtees himself about that very topic.
I don't know if you're aware of this, John, but there's a petition going around on the internet, and has been for a while now, for you to be knighted. So, first of all, are you aware of that? And secondly, how do you feel about it?
I had some people on from America on it, on saying about it and everything else, and saying, oh, look, you know, and in fact, all the Indy drivers, I was sent a sheet showing me all the Indy drivers had tried it all. I said, well, fine, mind you, I never actually got to drive at Indy apart from doing the testing. But perhaps it was because I did all the testing on the Indy car for Lola's. Because of my accident in 1965 at Mossport, when the suspension broke up there on the car, I couldn't drive. So while I was in the hospital in Mossport, I had to give some indication as to what I thought, and I told Eric Broadley and the sponsor of the car, I said, well, put Graham in the car, Graham Hill. And so I put Graham in the car, and of course he went and won with it. So I heard it from that source. I didn't hear it from any other source.
Well, what a legend. John Surtees there. That was me chatting with him on the phone for an interview with GPUpdate.net at the time, as it then was, in 2012. And if you want to listen to it, actually, I know it's a bit crackly there with the telephone signal, the quality of that call back then, but it is on my website, gregoryhaynes.com. If you go to the interview archive, there it is, with a few other things from the pre-broadcasting days. There's lots on there. It's amazing how fast the time goes. How on earth can 2012 be 12 years ago? I do not know. Oh, and it's that moment of the week. It's our soap opera moment of the week. And I'm going to have to go with Nicolò Buhlegger and his pace at the test. When you consider that this man is a rookie, he's just come in as the reigning world supersport champion, hadn't even done a superbike race until Phillip Island in February. And now people scratching their heads, wondering what to do. If you want a prediction for the weekend, I'm going to say, if anyone's going to beat Ducati, it'll be Toprak Razgatlioglu if he can win the sprint race for BMW. But there's going to be some big questions on tyre life, some very, very punishing corners. The track has been described like an ice rink. People spinning up tyres. We're going to see lap times going off 3-4 seconds a lap slower at the end of races if the tyre drops. And it's not necessarily dangerous, but they're just going to not have any grip at all. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. I predict 3 Ducati wins. We'll find out in the next few days whether that was right or not. But definitely for now, Buhlegger's pace and the effect he's having on everybody else is our soap opera moment of the week. And that's it for this week. We'll be back at the slightly later date of Saturday next week. That'll be the 30th of March. Saturday the 30th of March. And then we are into the fourth month of the new year already, would you believe? Can't really call it a new year anymore, can we? Considering it's nearly April. Back on Saturday then, with all of the reaction from Portimao for MotoGP and from Barcelona for World Superbikes. For now, enjoy your doubleheader racing weekend. Are you going to see any daylight? Or are you going to just be sat in front of your mobile devices and television screens? I don't really blame you if you are. Have a good weekend, enjoy the action, and speak to you on Saturday next week, the 30th of March. Where do you listen to your podcasts? At home or on the go? Subscribe now to Talking Away with Greg Haynes on your favourite platform. You'd be doing me a favour if you did.